So, chatting with Andrew Henderson ahead of the first game of the season in the Championship for the York Knights this weekend. Endo, thanks for your time. We'll start with shall we call it an alternative pre-season? So, I think it's been a fantastic concept, you know, and I know you've used the Cup games as it was pre-season and almost friendlies as it was, mixed results, but it must have given you, because it's competitive games rather than just friendlies. And so, how have you been with it? Have you been pleased with how it's gone?
Yeah, look, obviously it's been just a different, I guess, thing to contend with this year. I mean, traditionally we have our pre-season phases that we plan accordingly. We know we've got so many weeks up till Christmas. We then know we've got so many weeks after Christmas and then lead into a couple of friendlies. And obviously friendly fixtures allow you to just play with some different variables, I guess. You know, you can have more players on the bench. You've got unlimited interchange. You can chop and change and have a look at a few more different things. I suppose when you coming into these sort of cup games this year round, you know, you are restricted to your 17, you're restricted to a certain amount of interchange. So you do have to treat it a bit more like a traditional game, so to speak. Not to say you still can't experiment with some of your combinations and a few little plays or a bit of style of play that you may be looking to see how's that translated from what we've done in pre-season, et cetera. So we're still able to use it for a bit of that, but certainly not to the same context as you traditionally would do. And the other thing too is it's just been a different dynamic to navigate as well, because we've sort of almost had, you know, an extra month in January to build into our first competitive fixture, whereas traditionally our friendlies would have started probably middle of January or early to mid-January. And then obviously we've always had that bit of what-if scenario of we may just have the two group games of the 1895 and we may get knocked out in round three of the Challenge Cup. So essentially we could then have 5 or 6 week period before round one. Yeah. How do we prepare and train during that phase if that's the case? But then there's also we've had to plan and prepare for if we got to round four of the Challenge Cup and if we got to round five of the Challenge Cup and potentially, you know, to round six. So how does that look? And obviously if we get to the quarterfinals of the 1895. So we've had to, as a performance staff, you know, consider a lot of different variables and options in terms of our pre-season program and how we plan and structure that. So that's been a different challenge. But again, that's the great thing about coaching, Paul. Yeah, you know, you face these different challenges. But ultimately, we felt that, you know, going into that sort of 1895 Cup group stages, we had two fixtures there and round three of the Challenge Cup. We just thought if we can use those three fixtures as an opportunity to get everybody who's fit and healthy some game time, give us as staff an opportunity to really assess where everybody's at physically, mentally, also how they're sort of fitting into the style of play and the processes that we adapt. And then we can start to almost fine-tune the team a little bit more, you know, if we progress further into the competitions as such, which, as it turned out, it probably worked out quite well for us, the fact that we managed to play the three games and we got through to the quarterfinal stage of the 1895 Cup and also to round four of the Challenge Cup. So it fell perfectly for us, really, to give us those couple of games to lead into round one. But unfortunately, you know, we've obviously succumbed to a few guys getting suspensions off the back of the round four Challenge Cup fixture, which now throws another spanner in the works that we have to contend with. But and we've picked up a couple of knocks as well in those games. So yeah, but that's the nature of the beast. You know, I certainly didn't feel playing friendlies was the right way. I think we play enough games over the course of the regular season plus the cup games, plus potential playoffs. I just don't feel having, you know, one or two friendlies, which I know some clubs adopted that approach. They had a couple of friendly games leading into the cup competitions, but we just felt that we don't need to put our players under that more stress than they have to as they've got already. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, certainly with the Dewsbury game, we'll take that one. You know, we got to look at a few of the younger lads, a different layout, a different team, things like that. Do you feel that, you know, having had them cup games, friendlies, whatever we want to call it, do you feel you met all your objectives by doing it that way this season?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely. I think we had a look at a few things we experimented with against Newcastle, which I was excited about. And then we had a tough test against Wakefield, albeit, you know, we weren't at full strength that day. And that was, to be fair, a deliberate ploy. But again, it was just interesting to know what the benchmark of the competition looks like. And, you know, we learned some really good lessons there. And then, like I said, great to see a lot of the younger players against Dewsbury, who, are, as we know, are a championship club and team now. So just great to see where some of our younger players were at you know, in terms of their development journeys, and are they ready for Championship Rugby League football consistently, or could they handle that? You know, it was just a good exercise to see where some of those guys are at, and also to be fair to them all, you know, they've all had a really good pre-season, they've all had a crack, and they all deserve the opportunity to feature for this club and this team, and then we can make some more informed decisions off the back of those three games in terms of where we see people in the pecking order, how we see the team sort of shaping up in terms of how we want to play, and who fits the bill best to fit that scenario. So, no, look, it's definitely been a worthwhile exercise, and yeah, and hopefully, come round one of the competition, we'll have got those ingredients right. Yeah.
Charlie Sev appeared 1 week, and you know, obviously he was recalled by Hull. Yeah. So, you know, we looked at a loan option. The consensus around the fan base is that we might be one biggie light, up front. You know, we lost Pauly, we lost Kermo, we lost Clarkey. Yep. That's three big names, three big people. Do you feel the balance is still right? Are we far away from it?
I wouldn't say the team is complete, if that makes sense. But ultimately, we've got to work to, you know, the budgets that we have set. You know, obviously, we already had a large number of players already contracted to the club on their second year or 2 year deals previously, or longer. We managed to retain some of the players from last year, which I think was really, really important. I'm a big believer in continuity and consistency within your group, and we have got a good group of men there, and a talented group of men that for me still have their best years of rugby league ahead of them, but it's important that you do have continuity and cohesion, so I felt we got that right. And again, we've just got to, for me, we're not a club that are going to panic buy. We never have been, certainly since Clint Goodchild's been at the club, so we'll just stick with what we've got at the moment and crack on. And if the right type of player or person that we feel could add to the team and add value in a different way for what we need, then we can certainly look at that. But at the moment, yeah, look, the squad is what it is. Like I said, we've looked to try and obviously add Charlie Severs, a local lad, into the mixer. But unfortunately, that hasn't been able to transpire just yet due to the fact that Hull have had a few bans and quite a high number of injuries early in the season. So, you know, whether we'll get to see him feature soon, I don't know. But ultimately, mate, yeah, we're not going to say that the market's closed to us at this stage, but we're not going to just go and buy anybody who's available. Yeah. It's got to be the right fit for this club moving forward.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing, you know, we speak about the team, et cetera. So, the coaching staff as well, you tweak that, you know, Paul Cook come in. And it's just been interesting to know how those dynamics are developing. I enjoy working in, because you've changed it around behind the scenes as well. I think, you know, not everybody sort of sees that. And is that working for you, do you think?
Yeah, certainly is now. We sort of, last year was it was tough, obviously, last season, because I came in at the sort of final hour and, you know, kind of had to inherit a number of staff and obviously inherited a squad. So it was kind of let's assess who's going to add value in the long term moving forward, who's part of this journey, who wants to be part of this journey, and who's good enough to be part of it too. So we've sort of, you know, we made some changes with the staffing personnel throughout the year last year, and obviously have made some changes in the close season as well to try and improve things, because ultimately, you know, all I care about is how can we service our players as best we can. I appreciate we're still a semi-professional part-time organisation, so, you know, we are again limited to what we can recruit and bring in from a staffing operational point of view, but and also a playing operational point of view, but ultimately it's to try and get the best with what we've got in terms of finance and resource. So I do feel that going into this year, I think we've improved medically. I think we've improved our S&C situation now. And obviously we've improved the coaching department, I believe, now with the addition of Paul. So, you know, for me, I think we've got more tools at our disposal now to service our players better for the longer term, to help them develop and progress further physically, mentally, but also with their rugby IQ and smarts as well. So hopefully we'll see the benefits of that staffing operation, you know, in the long term, on the field with the playing group and the team itself. And like I said, I do feel we have improved the playing squad as well to a degree, comparing it to last year's squad in terms of some of the positions that we've got a little bit more strength and depth in, a bit more quality, and I still think we've got a pretty good balance of youth and experience.
Yeah, which leads us nicely into the next one. We spoke about this at the end of the season, about losing a captain and a leader. We have a new captain. We've got some new combinations around the captain. Given the glimpses you've seen, we must be pleased how that's going and how Liam stepped up to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the Liam Harris one was a, you know, we started working with Liam sort of mid-season last year. I was kind of aware that Chris was likely going to finish up. He never confirmed it till later in the day, but the indicators were there that this was potentially going to be his last year. And I think that's where, you know, I've always been a planner as a coach anyway. And, you know, sitting down with my staff, you know, we felt that we need to be proactive here and have a contingency, because if Clarkie wasn't going to stay on, then we need to start, you know, developing our next leaders. So, you know, we came up with a process to do that. And, you know, there was some focus on Liam. He probably didn't realise at the time that that was happening, but, you know, it was a process where I did see him naturally grow into that role on the field towards the back end of the season. Little things that we did there too to encourage that leadership qualities to come out and be unearthed were good. And then we had that conversation in the close season, you know, around, you know, taking that responsibility on, which he was more than excited about and more importantly, more than comfortable with, which was great. So I'm pleased that we gave him that confidence where he feels he could add value as a leader to this team. And he's done a tremendous job so far for us, and I'm really pleased that he is our captain. But then equally, it was important to get some good lieutenants for him, you know, to support him. You know, he's still a fairly young player, is Liam. You know, I'd say he's an established player, obviously, but he's still got quite a few years left in the tank. So, you know, I think the acquisition of both Jimmy Kynos and Richie Myler to support him around with some of our other leaders within the group that we've already got, the likes of Geordie Thompson, etc., Kumatai, you know, there's some good people, you know, to support him on that. So, I think we've built a pretty strong contingent of leaders within the team. And again, you know, there's I always try and encourage everybody to lead with their actions and their habits. And, you know, I think we've got a good group of those guys anyway.
Yeah. And the next question that always rolls out when we talk about players is injuries and long-termers. Yeah. Short-termer one, maybe. Atta, where's Atta at?
Yeah, no, he'll be available for selection round one if selected. Yep.
Great stuff. Bailey, there's been a bit, and you know, Bailey's a bit in front, is he?
Yeah, he's probably a little bit ahead of schedule at the moment. You know, he's recovering really, really well. So he's ticking some good markers at the moment. So, but again, you know, Bailey and Levi Edwards, those two are long term injuries at the moment. So, as I've said previously, they likely to feature probably mid season, but we may get them back a little sooner. You may get them back. It all depends on the, you know, things can change and happen the course of recovery. And at the moment, both players are progressing really well. And I'd argue that Bailey's slightly ahead of schedule.
Okay. Yeah. Santi and Kuno?
Yeah, well, Santi picked up a calf knock, a strain against Sheffield in the Challenge Cup game. So it's not a long-term one, you know what I mean? He could be available for this Doncaster fixture. It may be a week too soon, but we'll assess him and see how he goes.
And Kuno?
And Kuno just picked up a little niggle too against Newcastle. Again, he's not far off either. Could be available this week or in the next week or two. They're all quite sort of short-term there.
Okay. And again, leading in very well. This week, Doncaster away. Are they ready?
Well, as ready as we're going to be at this stage of the season. You know, it's probably not ideal that we've had a little bit of disruption. We're going to have three of our players that are, you know, in prime positions there missing for round one. But ultimately, it gives us another opportunity to look at some other people in different roles and positions. So, and that's the luxury of having a deeper squad this year with a bit more strength and depth to basically cover and mitigate for these sort of situations. So obviously disappointed that the players that are missing for the reasons that they're missing for. That's one thing, but ultimately, you know, other players will get a chance to shine, and I'm confident the guys that come into those to fulfil those roles will do a really good job. So, you know, it shouldn't deter too much for how we approach the game or what we're going to do within the game.
Yeah. I mean, Doncaster, you know, they're scattered with, you know, there's some old faces from York. You know, York fans will reckon, obviously, Paulie is the latest one, but Connor, who served York really well when he was there, Ben Jono, Brad Hare, Tyler Heppy had a little bit of York. You know, they all had something. And then you look at who they've signed, Reece Lynn, Craig Hall, Sutcliffe, Briscoe. They've brought in some talent, you know, without a doubt.
Oh no, look, I think, you know, you've got to credit Doncaster. You know, they've done a tremendous job. I know for a number of years, Carl Hall is a great guy who obviously leads that club very, very well. You know, he's obviously had a lot of ambition and aspiration to get out of that League One now for a few years, and I'm really pleased for him and his staff that they've managed to achieve that. I think Doncaster it's a great club. It's well run, fantastic playing facility at the Keep Moat there, and I'm looking forward to going there and playing them. It should be a great game. But what you've also got to take your hat off to them is they've, you know, know, they've got promoted and they've put some investment behind the behind the team. So, you know, they certainly don't want to be that kind of yo-yo team that's going to fall back into League One. And I don't think they will. I think when you look at the roster there and you've highlighted some of the names, I think they've got a really good balance of a core group of players that got them out of that division. But then they've got some, you know, some great experience of players that have been in the top flight even only as long as 12 months ago playing Super League, or they're really good established players, you know, likes of Briscoe and, like I said, Hall and, you know, Reece Lynn, Paulie, Lovadool, you know, Lovadua, you know, that's what I'm saying, there's guys all playing Super Matangi or playing Super League only 12 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they've got a very good squad. They're going to be a tough team to beat. There's no doubt about that. You know, we're going to have to be, you know, very, very good, certainly on Sunday, if we're going to get there, go there and get a result. Because, like I said, they're a quality side. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree totally. So. I think the other thing, and it'd be remiss of me if I didn't mention it, but because it's all over the sort of rugby headlines and something like that, about the rules and the amendments to rules. And I'm very much of the school is that little has changed. It's about tidying your act up and doing things the proper way. But Sheffield was a test for us. And how have you taken that back to the playing group in reviews, to your training field and things like that? Because it did, I mean, I know things have maybe been relaxed since, but it did shine a light on something that maybe people don't want to see almost.
Yeah, well, like you just said there, I'm with you. There's not really too much that's changed in regards to the rules. Like, you've always had to play the ball correctly. It's just that for a number of years now, it's just not been policed, and players have been allowed to get away with just rolling the ball between their legs and it's play on. So same with the marker situation. Markers have always had to be square at marker. But for a number of years now, you know, and I'll be honest, as a coach, you know, we have coached a little bit to take that advantage, you know, because it's being allowed. You know, another, you know, again, you've never been able to have contact with the head.
Yeah.
You know, the difference is now is this, it's probably the punishment for that is a little bit more severe.
Yeah.
So if you took someone's chops off late, you know, around the head, you probably got a penalty and that was it. Whereas, you know, nowadays it's a straight red card if it's direct contact with the head. You know, if it's mitigating circumstances, it'll be a yellow card. So, or if it's, you know, it's only a little slap or so, then it might just be a penalty sufficient. So for me, it's just a case of the rules haven't particularly changed too much. Obviously, the six again rule that got brought in not so long ago, a year or two ago, has just slightly changed and adapted with the penalty being awarded inside your own half.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not been too many changes. It's just been more of a case of, you know, as coaches, you know, we want the ruck area a little bit cleaner, you know, so we can create a bit more of a free-flowing game and create a bit more ruck speed. You know, so that's what it is. The referees now are trying to police that area. Obviously, we are now more aware of the concussion situation within our game and the fact that we have to keep the game safer. So there is now, obviously, again, a little bit more severe punishment for late shots, you know, on players, or certainly contact with the head, etc. So, yeah. So, again, it's not a case of rules changing, but we just have to be a little bit smarter about how we go and approach our contact area and how we execute our tackle technique. And also we just have to make sure we're really good at playing the ball with your foot, as you should do, as you did when you were a kid and taught as a kid, and then obviously make sure we're square at marker so we're not giving away, you know, really cheap field position and possession for things that we can generally control. So, but going back to your point about the Sheffield game, yeah, none of that was for, you know, not playing the ball correctly and stuff like that. Yeah. It was late hits on the passer. And that's an individual responsibility. I feel that game, if I'm honest, you know, a number of players got caught up in the emotion of the game and were rattled.
Yeah.
We spoke about that as a group. I've not seen as rattled or showing a lack of composure in that manner.
Yeah.
For certainly tonight, I've been coaching at this club, so it certainly was a strange one. Hopefully, it was just a one-off. We've obviously addressed it as a group. You know, we've got a few ideas that we've come to present to the group, which will hopefully give us a bit more clarity and understanding of that, in order for it not to repeat itself. But ultimately, I feel that day was more of a day of certain players just got their timing wrong. But also, I felt the game was a frustrating game. I don't think it was, you know, managed as well as it could have been, you know, throughout the course of the game. So I think that created a lot of frustration within players from both sides. But I do feel that we allowed the emotion of the game in Sheffield to get under our skin a little bit. And yeah, we reacted and responded in the wrong fashion. So, and ultimately it cost us.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really it. I mean, thanks for covering every angle and every point there and being so honest. I can't wait for Sunday, I must admit. I'm buzzing, and I'm sure there's a lot of York fans out there like me who are really, really looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's been a long time coming, and, you know, we're used to having round one at that first week of February. We've had to wait till the middle of March. So, no, we're excited. You know, there's 26 rounds, you know, of this competition. It's, as we know, it's a long, old season, but like any team, we want to get off to a good start. And we want to sort of, you know, lay down an early marker and show what we're about. You know, we don't have to be at our best, you know, in terms of playing our best brand of rugby league at this time of the year. It's, but we need to find ways to win and make sure we're staying in the hunt. So, you know, I certainly don't want to be in a position like last year where we're trying to play catch up with a third of the season to go. So, but again, like you said, we're just going to take it week by week, and our focus now and attention is all on Doncaster. You know, whoever the 17 that are selected to go into that game on Sunday to do battle, I'm sure will give a great account of themselves. Yeah. I've got that trust and confidence in them, and we certainly all have that as a coaching group within that playing group. So I'm excited to see what we can put together and show.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks for your time and best of luck at the weekend.
Thanks, mate.